ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Text Number 8. Ekasmin api drishyante Purvishthani charannicha Purvashminva parashminva Tatve tatvani sarvasaha Ekasmin api drishyante Purvishthani tadannicha Purvashminva parashminva Tatve tatvani sarvasaha Ekasmin api drishyante Purvishthani tadannicha Purvashminva parashminva Tatve tatvani sarvasyaha Ekasmin in one element Api even Trishyante they are seen Pravishtani entered within Itarani others Cha also Purvashmin in a prior subtle causal element, such as the dormant presence of ether within its cause sound. Va, either, parashmin, or in a later produced element, such as the subtle presence of sound within its further product, air. Va or tatve in some element tatvani other elements sarasaha in the cases of each of the different enumerations translation all subtle material elements are actually present within their gross effects simile All gross elements are present within their subtle causes, since material creation takes place by progressive manifestation of elements from subtle to gross. Thus we can find all material elements within any single element. Purport. Since material elements are present within each other, there are innumerable ways to construe and categorize the material creation of God. Ultimately, however, the significant element is God Himself, who is the basis of all the transformations and permutations of the material cosmos. The creation of the material world takes place by a progression from subtle to gross elements. As explained in the Sankhya Yoga system of Lord Kapila. The example may be given that we find the dormant existence of an earthen pot within mud, and also the existence of mud within the earthen pot. Similarly, one element is present within another, and ultimately all elements rest within the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is simultaneously within everything. By such explanations, Krishna consciousness constitutes the ultimate scientific methodology for factually understanding this universe. Read the verse again. Ekasmin api drishyante purvishthani tadannicha Purvashminva parashminva tatve tatvani sarvasaha All subtle material elements are actually present within their gross effects. Similarly, all gross elements are present within their subtle causes. Since material creation takes place by progressive manifestation of elements from subtle to gross, thus we can find all material elements within any single element. This chapter here, of course, called The Elements of Material Creation. So, as has been described in this chapter, different philosophers and scientists, men of knowledge, try to come to an understanding of the nature of the material world by different philosophical processes. And we can categorize those philosophical conclusions by the number of different elements that they identify. So, according to their different ways of perceiving the material world, they come up with a certain number of elements, and according to those elements, that their philosophy is manifested. So, for instance, the materialistic scientists, they consider carbon to be, one of the building blocks of life. And when they search throughout the universe with their different scientific apparatus, they try and detect the presence of carbon. And for them, the presence of carbon indicates the possibility of the presence of life. So, because you see that because they have categorized. They have the what do they call that chemist chart, period table. Yeah. They have the period table, and there are how many elements? 30.
It's growing.
It's growing, is it? Yeah. That's it. Over 100. There's only about 30 when I went to school. Yeah, that's all. Yeah. Okay. So it's growing. The period table. So many different elements. But of course, because there is an element that they haven't detected, which is the spirit soul, or to speak of the Supreme Spirit, therefore they can only come to a certain philosophical or a certain understanding as to the nature of the universe, because there are some elements that they haven't detected, the spiritual elements. So, according to the way that people categorize the elements of existence, their philosophy can be, categorized in that way. That these ones have, 28. Well, that's Krishna. I think Krishna has 28. This one has 25, 26, 13, 9, 16, like that. So, in one sense, they are all seeing, to some degree, some aspects of the truth. In the previous purport, it described that they're all speculating. Some things which they are perceiving, as Krishna describes, because it is according to his will, which is manifested by his own spiritual potency, then people can perceive different aspects of truth within the material creation. And the speculation is, of course, when they feel that their particular system is the supreme or the absolute conception, that part of the equation is speculative. So in other words, we see that the scientists conclude that without the presence of carbon, there can be no presence of life, and they feel that they know everything, and there is no knowledge above what they know. So therefore, that is speculative. Although, many of the things that they do know are actually perceptions of the truth. But it's certainly a speculative conclusion to feel that the limited part that they do know is everything. So that's speculation. And because they cannot know everything, their philosophy always remains limited. And therefore, although they have some aspects of the truth, they have to fill the gaps with speculation as well. That's like their glue that binds all their philosophy together. So they have a little bit of truth and a little bit of the glue of mental speculation, a little bit like this. So they bind it all together. but ultimately, as described here, the very nature of Krishna's material creation, of course, is that because all elements exist within each of the other elements, and a subtle cause exists within the gross manifestation, which becomes the subtle cause for the next gross manifestation, which like this goes on. So therefore the beginning subtle cause exists within all further manifestations, and the next subtle cause exists within the next manifestation. So from the very first subtle cause, all those subtle causes accumulate to exist within each the next element. So if we go backwards from the gross elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, well, of course, if we take ether, we will find the air. Within that is fire. Within that is the water. Within that is the. Am I doing it? I'm going the wrong way. Within earth, there is water. Within that, there is fire. Within that, there is air. Within that, there is ether. Yep. They're going backwards that way. Similarly, from mind, more subtle than the mind is the intelligence. More subtle than the intelligence is the false ego. And more subtle than the false ego is the spirit soul. The false ego, of course, is our sense of identity. Our sense of identity, called the false ego, because we have a misunderstanding of who we are. But our pure understanding of identity, pure ego, is the manifest from the spirit soul, who actually exists in pure knowledge and can perceive itself properly. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that when the mirror of the mind is cleansed, one can perceive one's own spiritual existence, and that of course is done through the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So within the spirit soul is the supreme soul, and ultimately if you go back to the original most subtle cause, which is spiritual, spiritual cause is much more subtle than even the most subtle of material elements. You'll find that the ultimate subtle ingredient is God Himself. Therefore, God is one, because actually within creation there is nothing but Krishna. whole manifestation of the material and spiritual worlds consists of Krishna. Krishna and his energy. There is nothing but that. There is no other ingredient. So within everything is the Supreme Lord. He is within everything. I think that's described here. Yeah. The significant element is God himself, who is the basis of all the transformations and permutations of the material cosmos. Yeah. Similarly, so therefore it's describing that all elements rest within the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is simultaneously within everything. So this is the next, here we see that because there is nothing within all of material spiritual creations apart from the Supreme Lord himself and his multifarious energies, he must be within everything, because all of creation consists of him and him alone. There is no second. So he is within everything. And everything is within him simultaneously. At the same time that everything is within him, he is able to maintain his own personal identity and form, and therefore he says in the Bhagavad Gita that, behold his mystic opulence, at the same time he is not within everything. In other words, everything is within the Supreme Lord, because it is resting upon his one of his multifarious energies. At the same time, because he maintains his own individual personal form and identity, then everything is not with him. So he exists in his own right as well. This is the transcendental nature of the Supreme Lord. So there's some nice verses in the Bhagavad Gita which discuss this. This is actually the practice of yoga. The practice of yoga, of course, is to rise above illusion and to be able to perceive reality, and then to fix one's mind on reality. That's yoga. The mind and the senses are absorbed in the illusory aspect of material existence. And through yoga, we withdraw our mind and senses from the illusory material existence. We perceive the absolute truth, and we fix our mind upon that. That is yoga. So that is described here in the Bhagavad Gita. And of course, what is the result of doing that? What is the result of doing that when a yogi does that? Yes, he becomes God conscious. And what is the result of that? Yes, that's another way of saying what Rasa said. It was our Bhakti Vaibhavis. What is the result? What is in the, let's see, second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam? When we distinguish reality from illusion, what does it do? It uproots the threefold miseries. Dharma prajita kaitavotra paramo namatsaranam. The Srimad Bhagavatam distinguishes reality from illusion, and such truth uproots the threefold miseries, because all suffering has one root cause. All suffering. People try to suffer, try to fix suffering with money and social workers and this and that and the other. But they don't realise there's one root cause, and if they fix that, they fix all suffering. And that root cause is that we're identifying with the material body. And therefore, as the material body goes through the natural reactions within, according to the modes of material nature, we suffer. The modes of material nature, of course, cause the creation and the destruction and maintenance of everything. And so as our material body becomes created and maintained and destroyed, we suffer. And then again and again and again. So, and all our possessions and go through this. By not identifying ourselves with the material energy, with the material body, and coming to the understand our eternal spiritual nature, we immediately uproot all the threefold miseries. And of course, by becoming Krishna conscious, more than that, that is just the beginning. We can also, for those who can appreciate the Supreme Personality of Godhead and reciprocate in Bhakti Yoga, they can also experience eternal transcendental bliss, ecstatic spiritual life. So in the 15th, in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's some nice verses here. So this is chapter 6, text 29. Sarva buddhistam atmanam sarva bhutani chatmani ikshate yoga yuktatma sarvatra samadarsana. A true yogi observes me in all beings and also sees every being in me. So that we've just discussed. Indeed, the self-realized person sees me, the same Supreme Lord, so me means Krishna, everywhere. So one who's self-realized sees God everywhere. Then he says, Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati tasyaham na pranasyami samena pranasyati. For one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. So here, this is a very nice verse, because certainly we can understand that from the devotee's perspective, or the yogi who's realized the Paramatma feature, if they're able to see the Supreme Lord everywhere, they're never bewildered, they're never lost to themselves, they never lose sight of their own spiritual nature, and they never lose sight of the Supreme Lord. He is present everywhere at all times. But Krishna is also saying that it is reciprocal, that because the devotee, whether it is the devotee in Santa Ras, neutrality, who is a lover of the Lord in a neutral state and fixes his mind on the Paramatma, then the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul, actually always is aware of the fact and reciprocates with that devotee. And so there is communication. And similarly, for those who fix their mind on Krishna, who is the source of the Paramatma feature, Krishna always fixes his mind upon those devotees. And then the next verse here, sarva bhuta sitam yomam bhajati katvam astita sarvata vatamonopi sa yogi maivatate. Such a yogi who engages in the worshipful service of the Supersoul, knowing that I, Krishna, and the Supersoul are one, remains always in me in all circumstances. And at the end of this chapter, of course, because Krishna is describing that some meditate upon the Supersoul and some meditate upon the original form, even from whom the Supersoul expands, and Krishna says, those who meditate on me, Krishna, that original form, they're the best of yogis. Yoginam api sarvesham madgatinantaratmana sarvan bhajate yomam sameyuktatamomataha. And of all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and renders transcendental loving service to me, he is the most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. That is my opinion. Because we should understand, of course, or the devotees understand, that Vishnu, or the Supersoul, that is Krishna. Although the Supersoul appears within the heart of every living being, and within each and every creature, within the ant, within the outcast, within the elephant, within the dog eater, within the Brahmin, like this, within everyone's heart, the Supersoul is there. But actually, the Supersoul is one. In the same way that, although the sun is situated in one place, it appears to be situated in many places, but it is one. And similarly, the Supersoul is actually one, although there is a Supersoul within everyone's heart. But that multi-manifestations of Supersoul is actually one vision. And although the Supersoul manifests within all the unlimited universes, ultimately that Supersoul is Vishnu is non-different from Krishna. God is one. Vishnu is just the form of the Lord expanding and bearing witness and sanctioning within each universe, within each living entity. And of course, again, we can see how the Lord is within everything, that he's within the heart of each living entity, and he's also within each and every atom. So he is within everything. And at the same time, everything is resting within God, because there is nothing but God. And although everything rests within God, he maintains his own personal form, and therefore he appears within the different material universes in order to, because he knows that for those, as it describes here, that if we try to always remember and fix our mind on the Supreme Lord, then that person is never lost to the Supreme Lord. So he comes and manifests to that devotee by appearing within the universe in order to deliver that person and help them to be fully Krishna conscious, in order to really turn whatever spark of God consciousness that may be there. The Supreme Lord never loses sight of that devotee, and in many different ways, personally and through the Shastra and through the Guru and through the Supersoul and through his own appearance in the universe, he fans that God consciousness until it becomes a great burning fire that just completely eradicates material existence so that the devotee can go back to the spiritual world. So there's actually a nice pastime in the Krishna book, which I'll read, which illustrates very nicely some of these points, and also brings up some other very interesting points we can discuss. Now, this is called the Vision of the Universal Form. It's chapter 8 of the Krishna book of Srimad Bhagavatam. The first part describes the name-giving ceremony of Krishna, which I'll skip that bit part and come to the next part. A short time after this incident, the name-giving ceremony, both Balaram and Krishna began to crawl on their hands and knees. When they were crawling like that, they pleased their mothers. The bells tied to their waist and ankles sounded fascinating, and they would move around very pleasingly. Sometimes, just like ordinary children, they would be frightened of others and would immediately hurry to their mothers for protection. Sometimes they would fall into the clay and mud of Vrindavan and would approach their mothers smeared with clay and saffron. They were actually smeared with saffron and sandalwood pulp by their mothers, but due to crawling over muddy clay, they would simultaneously smear their bodies with clay. As soon as they would come crawling to their mothers, Yashoda and Rohini would take them on their laps and, covering the lower portion of their saris, allow them to suck their breasts. When the babies were sucking their breasts, the mothers would see small teeth coming in. Thus their joy would be intensified to see their children grow. Sometimes the naughty babies would crawl up to the cow shed, catch the tail of a calf and stand up. The calves, being disturbed, would immediately begin running here and there, and the children would be dragged over clay and cow dung. To see this fun, Yashoda and Rohini would call all their neighbouring friends, the gopis. Upon seeing these childhood pastimes of Lord Krishna, the gopis would be merged in transcendental bliss. In their enjoyment, they would laugh very loudly. Both Krishna and Balaram were so restless that their mothers, Yashoda and Rohini, would try to protect them from cows, bulls, monkeys, water, fire, birds, while they were executing their household duties, always being anxious to protect the children. And to execute their duties, they were not very tranquil. In a very short time, both Krishna and Balaram began to stand up and slightly move on their legs. When Krishna and Balaram began to walk, other friends of the same age joined them, and together they began to give the highest transcendental pleasure to the gopis, specifically to Mother Yashoda and Rohini. So, because it is this... these pastimes, which are very bewildering, because when we, as we've just described, that philosophers, if they're very, very fortunate, they may understand that yes, everything is resting within Brahman or the Supreme, but then how can that Supreme, you know, be crawling around like a baby, covered in cow dung and mud, and running to Mother Yashoda in fear, you know, hearing some noise, and drinking breast milk, and she's looking and seeing the little teeth coming in. So this, these pastimes, which people cannot appreciate at all, because their understanding, if they even come to that understanding after many, many millions of births, yes, everything is resting in God. I can understand that, finally. And then, oh, but here is God. Oh, what is that? Oh, here he is crawling around, you know, to Mother Yashoda, running in fear. So then, they just cannot accept it. But Krishna is displaying in his pastimes that although he is the source, he is the origin of everything, he does not lose his own personal identity, nor does he lose his personality, his loving propensity. So here we see that, as we described in the Bhagavad Gita, that one who sees the Lord everywhere, that the Lord is never lost to them. So you see Mother Yashoda, she's always thinking, she's churning the milk and she's thinking, Krishna will be, squashed by that cow, or, there's a bird coming, or, there's some fire. So she's always constantly thinking of Krishna. So the Supreme Lord is never lost to her because of her love. But at the same time, because Mother Yashoda is thinking of Krishna with such love, Krishna wants to perform activities by which makes that loving relationship so sweet that it is not possible. Mother Yashoda and all the residents of Vrindavan feel unlimited bliss by being constantly in trance, fixed in trance on the personality of Godhead. So his loving relationships, just like when people have a child, a young baby, and if you know people, we see sometimes within the community someone has a child. And of course, everyone is very joyful. But especially the parents, sometimes you see that they can think of nothing else for a long time. Everything, all their thoughts are around that child. There's a particular loving relationship. But Krishna, when he manifests himself as the child for his devotee, just to increase their loving, transcendental bliss, he becomes the most ecstatic child. When God becomes a child, his childhood pastimes are sweeter than any other child. He can do it best. But Krishna actually enjoys that. It's not that he is just making a show for Mother Yashoda or the devotees. Krishna is actually tasting and reciprocating with his devotees' love in many, many different relationships. So as Mother Yashoda is loving Krishna as the mother, and Krishna is drinking her breast milk, Krishna is enjoying that. Just like we have yajñas, and we throw grains into the fire. So certainly Lord Vishnu enjoys those grains, but not as much as in his original form of Krishna, that he enjoys that breast milk from Mother Yashoda. That is, there is a... because that breast milk of Mother Yashoda is literally her, love personified as this milky nectar which enters within his mouth, and that's what he is tasting. So, but these pastimes, of course, are very difficult for people to understand if they cannot appreciate that the Supreme Lord can maintain his own personal identity and form, even though everything is resting within him. And Krishna appears in a form just suitable for loving reciprocation. Just like one of the forms of the Lord is the universal form. So we have the form here of the deities. So the form of the deities is a form in material elements where the Supreme Lord, who is within, all of his material elements, he is fully present there. And he accepts that worship through those deity forms. So he is fully present there. We can also worship the Lord through the Virata Rupa. The Virata Rupa is a gigantic form. So this morning, of course, you know, I had the pleasure of putting clothes on Gaur Nitai. But, you know, if I was trying to dress the Virata Rupa, you know, how long would it take me? How much cloth would I need to get? It is the same. It is still the Lord in another form. But the Lord appears in a form which is just suitable for his devotees to reciprocate. If he maintained just that huge, gigantic form, how would we dress him? Yeah. Yeah. You know, one gem, to place one gem on his lotus feet would be like lifting up Mount Everest. You know? So Krishna actually appears in a form that his devotees can reciprocate with him. But in whatever form, he's enjoying that loving transaction. So here we see Krishna, he's appearing in that childhood form. Very, very beautiful, very accessible for that particular parental type of, protective type of love coming from Mother Yashoda. So, all the gopi friends of Yashoda and Rahini enjoyed the naughty childish activities of Krishna and Balaram in Vrindavan. In order to enjoy further transcendental bliss, they all assembled and went to Mother Yashoda to lodge complaints against the restless boys. When Krishna was sitting before Mother Yashoda, all the elderly gopis began to lodge complaints against him so that Krishna could hear. They said, "Dear Yashoda, why don't you restrict your naughty Krishna? He comes to our houses along with Balaram every morning and evening, and before the milking of cows, they let loose the calves, and the calves drink all the milk of the cows. So when we go to milk the cows, we find no milk, and we have to return with empty pots. If we warn Krishna and Balaram about doing this, they simply smile charmingly. We cannot do anything. Also, your Krishna and Balaram find great pleasure in stealing our stock of yogurt and butter from wherever we keep it. When Krishna and Balaram are caught stealing the yogurt and butter, they say, 'Why do you charge us with stealing? Do you think that butter and yogurt are in scarcity in our house?' Sometimes they steal butter, yogurt, and monkey and distribute them to the monkeys. Butter, yogurt, and milk and distribute them to the monkeys. When the monkeys are well fed and do not take any more, then the boys chide, 'This milk and butter and yogurt are useless. Even the monkeys won't take it.' And they break the pots and throw them hither and thither. If we keep our stock of yogurt, butter, and milk in a solitary dark place, your Krishna and Balaram find it in the darkness by the glaring effulgence of the ornaments and jewels on their bodies. If by chance they cannot find the hidden butter and yogurt, they go to our little babies and pinch their bodies so that they cry, and then they go away. If we keep our stock of butter and yogurt high in the ceiling, hanging on a swing, although it is beyond their reach, they arrange to reach it by piling all kinds of wooden crates over the grinding machine. And if they cannot reach, they make a hole in the pot. We think, therefore, that you better take all the jeweled ornaments from the bodies of your children." On hearing this, Yashoda would say, "All right, I will take all the jewels from Krishna so that he cannot see the butter hidden in the darkness." Then the gopis would say, "No, no, don't do this. What will you do by taking away the jewels? We do not know what kind of boys these are. But even without ornaments, they spread some kind of effulgence, so that even in darkness they can see everything." Then Mother Yashoda would inform them, "All right, keep your butter and yogurt carefully, so they may not reach it." In reply to this, the gopi said, "Yes, actually we do so, but because we are sometimes engaged in our household duties, these naughty boys enter our house somehow or other and spoil everything. Sometimes, being unable to steal our butter and yogurt out of anger, they pass urine on the clean floor and sometimes spit on it. Just see your boy now. He is hearing this complaint. All day they simply make arrangements to steal our butter and yogurt, and now they're sitting just like very silent good boys. Just see his face. When Mother Yashoda thought to chastise her boy, after hearing all the complaints, she saw his pitiable face, and smiling, she did not chastise him. So, there we go into another pastime, because Krishna actually enjoys being chastised by Mother Yashoda. So he thought, I didn't get a chastisement from that, so we'll do something else. So another day when Krishna and Balaram were playing with their friends, all the boys joined Balaram and told Mother Yashoda that Krishna had eaten clay. So this really got him. On hearing this, Mother Yashoda caught hold of Krishna's hand and said, "My dear Krishna, why have you eaten earth in a solitary place? Just see all your friends, including Balaram, are complaining about you." Being afraid of his mother, Krishna replied, "My dear mother, all these boys, including my elder brother Balaram, are speaking lies against me. I have never eaten clay. My elder brother Balaram, while playing with me today, became angry, and therefore he has joined with the other boys to complain against me. They have all combined together to complain, so you'll be angry and chastise me. If you think they are truthful, then you can look within my mouth and see whether I have taken clay or not." So, of course, here, Krishna, you know, he's telling lies. Because he enjoys the Mother Yashoda, she will get angry. And so this is very interesting, because we know that one of the pillars of religion is truthfulness. And who established that pillar of religion? That is Krishna. So, but in the spiritual world, Krishna enjoys on a whole different platform than the platform of morality that we know here. Now, here we can also understand that if Mother Yashoda looks in his mouth, what's she going to see? She's going to see the clay that Krishna has eaten. Now, because Krishna's potencies manifest themselves automatically in order to... So Krishna has... There's one particular aspect of Krishna that he can never be contradicted. So if he opens his mouth and she sees the dirt, he'll have been contradicted. And therefore, by his mystic potency, automatically, as he opens his mouth, the universal form is manifested by his energy, so that Mother Yashoda forgets all about looking for the dirt. So his mother replied, "All right, if you have actually not taken any clay, then just open your mouth, I shall see." When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was so ordered by his mother, he immediately opened his mouth just like an ordinary boy. Then Mother Yashoda saw within the mouth the complete opulence of creation. She saw the entire outer space in all directions. Mountains, islands, oceans, seas, planets, air, fire, moon and stars. Along with the moon and the stars, she also saw the entire elements. Water, sky, the extensive ethereal existence, along with the total ego and the products of the senses and the controller of the senses, all the demigods, the objects of the senses like sound, smell, etc., and the three qualities of material nature. She also could perceive that within his mouth were all living entities, eternal time, material nature, spiritual nature, activity, consciousness, and different forms of the whole creation. Yashoda could find within the mouth of her child everything necessary for cosmic manifestation. She also saw within his mouth herself taking Krishna on her lap and having him sucking her breast. Upon seeing all this, she became struck with awe and began to wonder whether she were dreaming. Excuse me. Or actually seeing something extraordinary. She concluded that she was either dreaming or seeing the play of the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She thought that she had become mad, mentally deranged, to see all those wonderful things. Then she thought, it may be cosmic mystic power attained by my child, and therefore I am perplexed by such visions within his mouth. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Personality of Godhead, under whose energy bodily self and bodily possessions are conceived. She then said, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him, under whose illusory energy I am thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband and Krishna is my son, that all the properties of Nanda Maharaj belong to me, and that all the cowherd men and women are my subjects. All this misconception is due to the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord, so let me pray to him that he may protect me always. While Mother Yashoda was thinking in this high philosophical way, Lord Krishna again expanded his internal energy just to bewilder her with maternal affection. Because Krishna is thinking that if she continues in this philosophical way, then who's going to hug him and who's going to give him breast milk? So he wanted to finish that up. Immediately Mother Yashoda forgot all philosophical speculation and accepted Krishna as her own child. She took him on her lap and became overwhelmed with maternal affection. She thus began to think, Krishna is not understandable to the masses through the gross process of knowledge, but he can be received through the Upanishads and the Vedanta or mystic yoga system and Sankhya philosophy. Then she began to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as her own begotten child. So there's a little more there, which I'll leave. Any questions or comments on any of those aspects? It is, that's nice, isn't it? It's a fact. It's a condensed nectar. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.